Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 78 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we have an interview with vital information about buying a puppy.
There's no point in winning and achieving and being a champion if you haven't got the rest of it.
No.
And the public deserves 100% to be spending their money and getting a quality puppy.
We have the Dogcast Radio news and also some exciting news about the Dogcast Radio website. But before all that, we bring you the second part of Paula Terrify's interview about saving money at your veterinarian. And of course, Paula should know, as she is one. So what if you suddenly get a big bill? And what if you're already in debt? Is insurance a good idea financially? Paula covers all this and more, plus what is the most important contribution you can make to your dog's health. We start today with the fact that it's vital to build a good relationship with your vet.
This is an intimate relationship. This is somebody that you're giving a big responsibility to with your dog.
Yeah.
So the relationship has got to be solid, and you have to build that relationship. You need to. That's why I say sometimes I've had clients or prospective clients come in and want to interview me.
Mm.
And you know what I say?
Mm.
Fine. Let me put aside 10 minutes and talk to you. I will do that. Well, I know some colleagues won't do that. They're sort of offended by it. But you know what? I think of myself like I'd be a dog owner. I respect that. I know that this is a person that has some real concerns. Maybe he's had a bad experience someplace else. Now, I won't spend a half an hour, but I'll do a meet and greet, 5-10 minute visit, let him look at the hospital, let him meet the staff. And I think that's okay. I think that I've gotten some good clients because I'm willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, as you say, they're invested in their pet, aren't they? They want the best for their pet.
Yes, they want the best for the pet. And that's the same thing. That's why these relationship building is important, and that's why it pays to go to several different veterinarians. Make that investment in your time. I've had people call up and just, you know, I knew they were really shopping for a new vet, and it didn't, you know, came out in the conversation. They were coming in just for a checkup, you know. And it we're really kind of to and that's fine. And those people, I always spend a little extra time with them because unfortunately some of them have had a bad experience. And we should be sensitive to that. And you shouldn't be afraid to the other thing of it is to be a little cautious of this. I do want to say this. If you have had a bad experience at another place, when you go meet your new prospective vet, let me give you just a little bit of advice. Don't start the conversation out like that. Wait. Check your vet out. Don't put your vet on the defensive. This is an awkward position for us to be in.
Mm.
I've had clients come in, a bad experience, and the first 10 minutes is a, quote, bitch session.
Mm.
Now, don't start it off with a bitch session. Okay, you've been unhappy someplace else. Don't alarm your vet who might think that you're going to be on the attack with them next. You go in and you just start with a clean slate, get your first impression, see how the vet's doing, blah, blah, blah. And at some point when it's appropriate, you may want to say that you did have a bad experience and you're worried about something like this happening again.
Okay? Yeah.
But if you go on a rant, you know, you're going to put your vet on the defense. And then you're not going to get a good idea of what could be possible with that, with the new one.
Yeah, definitely.
The new doctor.
Yeah, definitely. If when you are faced with a big bill at the vets, you know, what's the best way to cope with that?
Well, I say be prepared. This can happen to anybody. I'd like to say, in the best case scenario, you would have had a budget. You would have put aside some money for an emergency fund because this can happen. So if you could feel better about it happening, if you've put aside money for an emergency fund or you have pet insurance,
mm.
And there's all kinds of different pet insurance. There's pet insurance that's very comprehensive. It'll pay for part of your physical examinations. It'll pay for vaccines. It'll pay for cleaning your pet's teeth. So there's Plan A, Plan B, Plan C, and there's probably a Plan D out there. Every company has different packages. I say buy the package that you can most afford. And if it's just the one that doesn't carry all, or cover the routine things, then get the one that covers real damages. Your dog's hit by a car. Your dog's gotten really sick and had to be hospitalized. Those are the big ticket items, the emergencies, I call them. As far as routine veterinary care goes, where you know you're going to be seeing your vet once or twice a year and you're going to be wanting to buy some flea control, and I think people should budget about $50 a month for that. That's just for kind of routine and then, you know, for the kind of routine visits, or, you know, your dog had to go in for an allergy that year, and then the other visit was just the routine. So if you're planning, you know, for just maybe two visits a year and some flea control, you know, you know that's about $50 a month. Plan for that, and maybe just buy the insurance program or buy the plan that covers the true emergencies.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if that happens and we haven't planned ahead, you know, and we have been caught out, you know, are there any charities that could help or not?
You know, that's really hard, because I'll tell you one thing, charities are tapped out. I mean, I wouldn't count on that. That would not be my backup plan. If you could find it, great. But don't have it as a backup plan, because it may not be there. And if it is, I can tell you this, when you're hit with that bill, you have to come up with money now.
Mm.
They're not going to go forward with the emergency surgery or a hospitalization without you leaving a deposit. They're going to give you an estimate. They're going to ask for a deposit. And you have to have that right now and then. So you don't have the liberty of looking around and waiting for help, even if it's out there.
Yeah, yeah. So the best policy is do be prepared then.
Well, always, even for ourselves. Be prepared. I was told once by somebody who I thought this was a really good idea, because people get a little overextended on their credit cards, and staying out of debt is a good way to stay out of trouble. If you're in debt, you should have a way to kind of climb out of it, because when you're faced with emergencies like this, this will be truly would be an extra burden on you if you already are burdened with other debt and now you have to take on new debt. Somebody once told me to have a credit card and put it in your freezer. Take one credit card and put it in your freezer. And the only time this credit card comes out is in an emergency. It is your emergency backup credit card. I think that's good advice.
Yeah. Keep it in the freezer and then you can take the heat then.
Take it out. Yeah, it still works apparently after you defrost it, you know. And at least, you know, at least if, you know, if you're at Macy's and you want to buy a brand new fur coat, well, you'd have to run home to get the credit card, and by then, hopefully, you've come to your senses.
Hopefully, yes. What sort of procedures, or, you know, I'm thinking of not anything huge here, but maybe, you know, nail clipping or something. What can we learn to do, and what can we include, you know, in our routines that will help us save money?
Well, every dog's different. As far as my dog, for instance, never has had her nails clipped. She just sits on her paws in just the right angle, that just walking on pavement, running on a little pavement, just files them down. I've never, ever trimmed my boxer's toenails.
Hmm.
So it's amazingly, it's not an issue for every dog. But I think the best way, I know that there are videos that you can watch and it can give you demonstrations on how to do it. You can also just take your dog to a groomer and ask to be shown how to properly cut the nails. Have the groomer cut the nails and get on-the-job training. I think on-the-job training, pay for the nail trim and see if it's something you can do. And that way you also know if you can do it. Because if you have a dog that struggles, and some dogs are a fight to trim the nails, you're just not going to be able to do it by yourself anyway.
Mm.
You're going to need a groomer. But if you've got that dog that will let you do it and a groomer to show you how to do it and you feel comfortable doing it, do your own nail trims. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my best advice there. And other ways to save money, You know, here's the basic rule. Diet's the most important thing. The number one best way that you're going to make sure your pet is in the best health possible is what you feed your dog. That is hands down the most important decision you'll ever make. Because honestly, in my 20 years of practice, I really think we're prematurely aging our dogs and making them not healthy in their golden years because of a poor diet. And it's not intentional. You are buying commercial pet foods. You are thinking you're buying good diets. Often you are not buying good diets. You're going with trusted name brands, maybe even diets your vets have recommended. But you have got to learn how to read a pet food label.
Mm.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Do not be duped by advertising. Don't even, unfortunately, I'm going to say don't even trust your vet's recommendation when it comes to diet, unless you've selected a vet that's more what they call into a holistic practice. So if you have a vet that's not invested in nutrition and doesn't feel that nutrition is that important, and believe me, your average veterinarian does feel that way, maybe they're still a good vet. That's not a reason not to go to your vet, but you can't not expect to get the right nutritional counseling there if your vet recommends Science Diet. For instance, I'm just going to say it.
Mm.
Because as veterinarians, most likely they're going to recommend our tried and old favorite foods, Science Diet, and the one that's following kind of behind that is Iams by Eukanuba. There's a reason for that. When we're in veterinary school, these companies pay for a lot of our seminars and give us a lot of free food. And you know, they do the same thing with the MDs. The drug companies do the same thing with the MDs and get them to be a little too heavy-handed on the drugs. They do the same thing to veterinarians in training. And the nutrition training we receive in veterinary school is woefully inadequate. It's just kind of basic minimum standards. It's not optimal nutrition. What you want for your pet is optimal nutrition, and that is not going to be a bag of dog food. Now, there are better bags of dog food than we had even 5 years ago. There are companies making much better quality ingredients, and that's for you guys to do the research. One way that people can get a real quick training in how to read a pet food label is to go to my blog. I have a blog that I've been building for the last year, and it's free information. Just going to take your time to read it. I finally got motivated, and what motivated me was a company called Purina who came out with their new darling dog food called Beneful. Beneful by Purina is on all the major networks. And I honestly got sick and tired of clients coming in and telling me that's what they were feeding their dog. So I finally had to write an expose on what I thought about Beneful. It's not even what I think about it. I just read the label and put it on my website or my blog, and I told people exactly what was wrong with pet food. It was the best. In fact, they gave me the worst example of a pet food I've seen yet. And so it was the perfect opportunity to use a pet food that's out there so people can see how widely advertised it is and then really make them read the label and tell them every reason why they would never buy a pet food like that. So anyway, I believe it's listed. The category is nutrition. It's under my nutrition category, facts or fiction. And it's called Beneful by Purina, the next pet food disaster. You want to feed your dog that, I guarantee you, an unhealthy pet, if that's all your dog ever eats.
Yeah. I mean, it is horrifying, actually, when you think you're buying something because it's, you know, maybe it's a brand name or you've seen it advertised or for whatever reason. And then when actually you do stop and look at the label and then you go and find out what these things are or what they could be, it does. Mm-hmm. It's horrifying.
Well, that's the beauty. That's advertising. That's what advertising does. It gets you to buy. You cannot be duped by advertising. Even the food that you're buying, you must look at the label. You can't. And even in the label, that's no guarantee of a real healthy, sound food either. Because then there's the manufacturing process, and then there's where they bought the food, which does not have to be. I mean, there's certain things on the label they don't have to reveal to you.
Mm.
The source of the meat and other things like that. So in addition to reading pet food labels, you've got to go with companies that you trust. And I list on the blog entry there, it will even tell you several companies that I have found to be very sound companies to buy products from.
Yeah.
So it's not just the label, you've got to research the company.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are companies you're not going to find at PetSmart and Petco or the grocery stores. These are not where you're going to buy quality premium dog foods. And the other thing that I always preach is you don't have to buy dog food at all. It's a ridiculous thing. It's convenient. All dog food is convenience. It's convenient. And I understand that some people have got to have some degree of convenience in their life. I respect that. But don't get the idea that feeding your dog the same food every day, even if you're buying a premium brand, is a healthy diet because it lacks variety. You've got to introduce variety, and it lacks freshness. These are still processed foods in cans and bags, and they don't have the same nutritional value as whole foods that you go down to the grocery store and buy and eat yourself.
Mm.
So we are compromising. It is a compromised way, and people have to make the decision how far they're willing to compromise their pet's nutrition.
Mm. Basically, I mean, a very strong message from you then is the best way, well, the best thing you can do for your dog and the best way you can save money is feed them as well as possible.
Absolutely. I tell people the best investment you're going to make is in your pet's nutrition. If you want to cook for your dog, it is not that difficult. Again, I'm not here to plug my book, but I probably won't write another book, to be honest with you. They're too much work. But I picked the three areas where people are just the most confused and the most misled and where I really felt I could help the most dogs. And the second one I wrote was how to feed your dog if you flunked rocket science, because I just become outraged over all the stuff that people seem to batter around and think is correct information. And in fact, most of the time, pet owners come in with the wrong information. They don't even know where to start to find the right information. That book is a real easy way to, first of all, understand what you need to know about the pet food industry, how to select the best diets, how to cook for your dog if you want to cook, and I even mentioned the new raw food diets that are causing a big ruckus out there. Some veterinarians are gotten hysterical over these raw food diets, which is just another simple way that people don't understand. What people don't understand, they are afraid of. And so get an education. Educate yourself. But if you want to feed your dog a raw food diet, you don't listen to some veterinarian who tells you you're going to kill your dog or make your dog sick with raw food. If you do it correctly, I feel it's safer probably than any other commercial pet food you're buying, because Julie, we've made our dogs and cats sick buying commercial pet food. We've poisoned them. So how can any veterinarian lecture you on feeding one of these raw food diets that are commercially made? So I'm saying to my clients, I'm pretty much promoting the commercial raw food diets and saying if you want to do your own raw food diet, you will need to read up on that. There's plenty of books out there about how to switch your dog to a raw food homemade diet and do it on your own. You've just got to get the ratio of bones, organ, and meat. You got to follow some simple rules. Most people don't want to go through the hassle, including myself. So I buy the raw food patties, and I do it right. You wash your hands. You don't leave the food out. You wash the food bowl. You defrost it in the refrigerator, not on the counter. You know, you follow some basic guidelines. So let me tell you this. If you want to do the raw food diet and you got a vet that shakes your finger at you and says, don't you dare, and I've had it happen because I've gotten some great clients this way. I mean, seriously. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, when they come in and they've come to me because they just, you know, Google's a wonderful thing. I don't advertise. I don't have to advertise. I'm just the vet that is happens to be the holistic vet in Orange County, which is there's a lot of people that live here. I don't know why there's not more of me. People can make a good living if you just get a little more disciplined in the area of what we call the natural health movement, which is prevention, diet, supplements, common sense, blah, blah, blah. At any rate, I don't want to get off the topic, but that I will say, be prepared. You people out there that are listening to this, if you want to go investigate the raw food diet, you're probably going to end up in a vet's office that's going to talk or try to talk you out of it. But if you're determined to do that, give your vet information. Educate your vet and say, I want to continue to come here. I like you. But you have to agree with how I'm feeding my dog.
Mm.
And if you disagree with that, I'm going someplace else. So it's, again, it's for you to decide how to feed your dog. I'm going to tell you this point blank. You need to find a veterinarian. As long as you've got sound information from trusted resources that you can share with your vet, good information, there's plenty of good information out there, your vet has to respect that. And if your animal does well on it, if your animal is performing well on it, there's another sign that you're on the right track. So always get feedback from the dog, who ultimately decides, along with your expertise in the area, what will be the best diet.
Sound advice as ever, Paula.
Yeah, so don't be afraid to, and you know, don't be afraid to feed your dogs what you cook for yourself. This is the other quick way to modify the dog's diet. You don't want to enter into the raw food category. You don't, that's fine. You don't feel that any commercial food by itself is the way to go. I've had people do this, and it's baby steps. I say, look, let's make it real simple for you. Here's a quality commercial pet food diet. What I want you to do is to modify that diet by adding some fresh protein to it every day. Vegetables are optional, but also a good way to have variety and extra nutrients. So I just tell people, feed less of your commercial food and add some cooked chicken on it. Add a couple scrambled eggs or hard-boiled eggs. Add some cottage cheese, add some tuna fish, add some sardines, canned salmon, or whatever you made for dinner that night. Just modify the diet. And in this way, we get the dog some variety and some fresh whole food. It's not that hard to do. And once you do it, you will have, your dog will be your new best dinner friend guest for life.
Yeah.
But once you start doing this and you see how happy your dog is, after a while, most of my clients just switch over and start cooking because they see the positive results. They see.
Mm.
You want to know the bottom line, everybody? We're killing our dogs. You're killing your dogs with commercial pet food if that's the only thing they ever eat. We are. I totally believe that because I have seen the difference. I have had 20 years in this, and I've seen the commercial pet food dogs, and I've seen the other dogs, and I've seen my own dogs. I've proved it with my own dogs when I switched off commercial pet food.
Mm.
But I'm not, when I say commercial, I'm meaning the typical kibble diet.
Yeah, yeah.
The ones that most people are still feeding.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's garbage. It's garbage in a bag. I'm not making any money telling anybody that. That is the truth. Do your own research. Do your own test. Do
yeah.
your own test and see if your dog's hair coat improves, overall it becomes more vitality. Do your own test.
Yeah.
And the last thing I wanted to say is, as far as preventing more trips to the vet, the number one problem we see is periodontal disease.
Hmm.
Okay, it is. To me, it's another reflection of diet. People haven't gotten that yet. They think that dogs that chew kibble are cleaning their teeth. You are not cleaning your dog's teeth by feeding them kibble. They crunch it and swallow it. They don't chew it. Dogs clean their teeth by gnawing on bones. That's the dog's natural toothbrush. And I've seen dogs that need less dental care just by what the owners feed. So you're going to have less tartar buildup, less gum inflammation with better diets. And if you want to prevent cleaning your dog's teeth, and this gets expensive, Julie. I mean, if you have to pay to have your dog's teeth cleaned every 6 months or a year, mm-hmm. cha-ching.
Yeah.
If you're feeding the best diet, if you're brushing your pet's teeth, giving your pet proper things to chew on, like rawhides, it can be very helpful. If you commit to a dental care program, you are going to save money and prevent problems in your dog's mouth. So if people are looking for more ways to save money, you certainly cannot neglect oral health care and all the things that you can do to lessen the amount of time your dog needs to have its teeth cleaned. May still have to get its teeth cleaned, but may not get it. You will not have to do it as often.
So it's true, it seems, that you are what you eat. And giving your dog a great diet is the best way to save money at the veterinarian, along with all Paula's other great advice. We have links on the Dogcast Radio site to Paula's site, and her blog, and you can also sign up for Paula's newsletter, Dog Breath. So go ahead and save money and keep your dog in the best of health. Don't forget, if you've enjoyed the Buddy's Diaries fiction and articles on Dogcast Radio, there's now a Buddy's Diary book. You can see the Dogcast Radio website for further details, and buying the book helps support Dogcast Radio. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. I want to talk to you about looking at life like a dog. At this time of year, as the weather gradually gets colder and wetter, it's easy to start feeling down. Virtually every time we go out for a walk, Star and I come back wet through and covered in mud. Now, a dog could begin to go off going out, with the frosty grass stabbing at your paws, and the streams just too chilly for a proper dip. But instead of that, I focus on the good thing waiting for me at home. Because any time we arrive back home dirty, we get a lovely rub down with a warm towel. I love this. I have been known to stand and wait, looking hopefully at the towel, even at the height of summer. Oh yes, there's nothing like a good rub down. And when I'm really grimy, I even get to lie on my back while my tummy is thoroughly cleaned, and then my legs and paws. All that attention is delicious. What more could a Labrador hope for? Star even gets to have all the twigs and leaves she has accumulated in her coat gently tugged out. I wish my coat was longer, so I had that too. But try as I might, my coat stays short. If you look hard enough, you can find a silver lining to almost any cloud. For example, the other week I had a problem with my front leg. It hurt every time I put it on the ground. I think I'd overdone it chasing the tennis ball. But whatever the reason, I couldn't run, and I was hobbling instead of walking. Don't worry, it cleared up very quickly. But it wasn't all bad, because while I was limping round, I got loads of extra attention and treats, and sympathy and cuddles. I don't really go short on that under normal circumstances, but the extra attention is always welcome. So I enjoyed it while it lasted, and before long, I was chasing after the tennis ball as fast as ever. Something that worries a lot of dogs is fireworks. All the loud noises and bright lights can be unnerving, but I am what is known as a gun dog, so big bangs don't concern me too much. Recently, we went down to town to see the Christmas lights switched on. They did need to be switched on, as it was very dark, but apart from that, I couldn't see what all the fuss was about. The lights didn't smell of anything particularly exciting, and they were up way too high to taste, so they weren't that interesting, although lots of people gathered for the occasion. Just before the lights were switched on, there were lots and lots of fireworks. Star didn't seem to mind it, even though he isn't a gun dog, but then it takes a lot to bother Star. I was quite happy too, standing watching the fireworks, and every time I stood watching, I was told I was a good boy in a cheerful tone of voice and given a treat. Brilliant, dinner and a show. So you see, it was actually a double whammy. I got to watch the fireworks and get treats. I could have hung my head miserably and worried about all that noise and lights, but instead I had a great time. At this time of year, you humans seem to get very excited and busy about arranging everything for Christmas. This doesn't mean much to a dog, except that I know my people have to waste more time than ever going out shopping. And they come back staggering home with big heavy bags. Then they spend ages hiding what they've bought in colourful paper, which they then give to people who spend just a few seconds ripping all that colourful paper right off. What sort of sense does that make? I don't know. But what I do know about Christmas is that I get to spend lots of time with my people. We go and visit Grandma and Grandpa, who always look after us when our people go on holiday, and Grandma sneaks us lots of turkey. If we're at home, lots of people come to visit us, and they're always having tasty things to eat, dropping crumbs on the floor that we get to clear up. Mmm. So after all the fuss and funny waste of time, what I love about Christmas is having my pack with me, and that's how I hope every dog spends Christmas, with his pack where he belongs. I'm off to hang up my stocking for Santa, so until next time.
The ancient Greeks thought that dogs could foresee evil. In the UK, there has been turmoil in the dog world recently, with a kennel club under attack for allegedly putting the appearance of a dog ahead of its health, with some breeds being affected more than others. At the same time, we still hear a lot about puppy farms and backyard breeders, and it all gets very confusing. So to get helpful, clear advice on how we should go about buying a healthy, well-bred puppy, I talked to Rottweiler and Greater Swiss Mountain breeder Kimberly MacDonald.
The thing that bothered me was, after the documentary Pedigree Dogs Exposed, there began to be adverts claiming that the dogs for sale were healthy simply because they were not KC registered, Kennel Club registered. So what I wanted to say to you, to ask you, you know, as a breeder that knows, okay, we seem to have got the message that Kennel Club at the moment doesn't necessarily mean, you know, a guarantee of health tests. But is the opposite true then? Does not being Kennel Club registered guarantee health?
No, it doesn't. Far from it.
And why is that, Kimberly?
Because basically you're not going to have a guarantee that they're even pedigrees at the end of the day, unless you've got a KC registration there to prove it. But also, anyone, any pet person in dog owner can just put two and two together and have a litter of puppies and sell them off and not provide anything. And those that are not KC registered, there's no comeback for the owners if anything happens to the puppy, because 90% of the time those people just want the money and they don't even care. They deny they even bred the litter sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. So don't believe anybody that says these dogs are not Kennel Club, therefore they are healthy. That's nonsense.
Nonsense. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now, another myth that I've heard is some people are sort of saying, well, my dogs aren't health tested because they are healthy.
So nobody knows until they're tested.
Yes, yeah.
And at the end of the day, if they dig their heels in the ground and don't do it, then perhaps they have something to hide.
Yeah.
There's nothing to lose by doing them, because if you get glowing health screens, your questions are answered.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, in some people's minds, it seems to be they are having health tests done because this is unhealthy stock.
No. The majority of us that do it are hobby breeders, and we've got the breed's best interest at heart and have always. Our dogs are part of the family, not kenneled or anything.
Yeah.
We've always believed that temperament comes first, then the health screens, and anything above that that you win in the show ring or the obedience ring, etc., is a bonus. Because if you don't have the first things, there's no point in winning and achieving and being a champion if you haven't got the rest of it.
No.
And the public deserves 100% to be spending their money and getting a quality puppy. And it doesn't ring true that you go to a top breeder and you get a quality puppy, because that sucks. It's a lot of the time it sucks.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing all the health screens, and they certainly don't do the temperament testing. You know, the public needs to be aware that, you know, if you pay good money, then from a hobby breeder or somebody that puts the time in and the effort in to do all the health screens and say, look, this is what I've done, I can't do anymore, but this is the best that we've done, and it's, you know, probably way better than any top breeder does, there is a kind of guarantee there that hopefully nothing will happen with that puppy, and the breeder has done the best that they can with the schemes available, because, you know, not all the schemes are available in this country. Some breeds have to send abroad to have things done. But here at the moment, we've got the BVA in London, which is in partnership with the KC. They have the eye test available, and you have to have that done by an eye specialist through a vet. You have the hip scoring and the elbow scoring. Both of those can be done here in the UK. And the heart testing is usually done by, again, a cardiologist specialist. And, you know, if you find your vet would normally know a good one that you'd be able to go to. The temperament tests are run through the clubs usually, but other clubs don't mind if another breed comes along and does a test. The more they can fill up their, you know, quota for that day, because I think they can only have between 12 and 14 to go, because I think it's like half an hour or so each dog to do the test or a temperament test. And the new test that the Rotties have brought in, a guy called Alan Reckitt, he's masterminded this new test. And we've been saying it for a long time anyway. It's basically three tests. You get a pass at each test under three different assessors at three different venues.
Yeah.
So nobody can say, oh, yeah, you went under so-and-so, so he is your friend, so he gave it to you anyway.
Yeah.
And on the third one, you are awarded excellent.
Yes, yeah.
Whereas in the past, it's always just been given a good pass, an excellent, or a fail.
Mm.
And no one can practice or train for a character test because it's everyday things. And if you've done what your breeder advised you when you took the puppy on, or any puppy, you socialised it, you trained it, you spent time and effort with that puppy and made sure that it was used to all the different things that go on in the world, it'll sail through the character test.
Yeah.
But I don't advise doing the character test before they are 18 months old because they haven't had the experiences.
But, I mean, would you advise sort of an ordinary pet owner that they would need that? Or is that sort of more for if you want to go on and do, you know, for example, therapy, pets as therapy work?
If you want to do pets as therapy, it's a good thing to go through the new test if the club's, because the Leonberger Club has taken on board the new Rottie one, which is on three phases. So we're hoping that more and more clubs will take it on board because it just shows that, you know, some of the top breeders that were able to get some of their dogs through a test before under, you know, whoever was their friend or whatever, they can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
They can't do it anymore. But a pet person, it would be good because, you know, at this day and age, there are so many rules and regulations about owning dogs where you can walk them on and off leads and things like that. The councils have stepped up to the mark and they're saying, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. A lot of neighbourhoods won't tolerate dog-on-dog aggression and things like that. If you can prove, if anyone ever said your dog had done something and you can prove that you've been through like three character tests and got graded excellent and show those certificates, etc. And also with the clubs, they do the Casey breed, you know, the schemes for the I think it's the bronze, silver and gold.
Mm.
And that means that your dog is a social member of society and he behaves and he does all the things. And that is all part of being a responsible dog owner. So, yeah, it's not compulsory for the pet owner to do it, but when we sell our puppies, we always advise everybody to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's got certificates there and you've got things. So it shows that you've put the time and effort in and you've gone to training and you've put your dog through everything.
Mm.
And he's been with children, he's been with other animals, and, you know, he's been down the road, he knows what cars are all about and things like that. So it isn't compulsory, but, you know, as breeders, we do advise that the new puppy owners carry on and do these things.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. In today's day and age, particularly with some breeds having, you know, aspersions cast on their nature and how, you know, nice they are, how pleasant, how sociable, then, yeah, absolutely, it's a great thing to do. And then you can say, well, you know, my dog is sound. He is socialised. Absolutely. Brilliant. You used a term there, hobby breeder. Now, we sometimes, I think more in America, to be honest, I've heard this term backyard breeder, or sometimes BYB. It's abbreviated to BYB. Mm-hmm. Now, that sometimes is used as a term of derision. You know, beware of backyard breeders. So, can we talk a bit about sort of what a hobby breeder is and sort of what a backyard breeder might be and what, you know, how do you spot the difference and is one good and is one bad kind of thing? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, a hobby breeder would be someone like me that's been in a breed for 20 odd years or 10 years plus, somebody that's stuck with it, that's very passionate and enthusiastic about their breed and that loves their animals and that is responsible and that will go out and you'll go into their homes and you'll find everything clean and tidy, all the dogs are friendly, grandkids, everything, all the puppies are reared in the home, everything's basically, you go in, if you find anything out of place, you know, if it was a backyard breeder, as you call it, you know, many we've been into and just the things are appalling, or they've been shoved in kennels or in a shed out the back. That's the difference there.
Mm.
With a hobby breeder, they will do their utmost to make sure that they're rearing quality puppies. You know, the prices of vet bills and food bills and to and fro into various things, bringing in assessors to do puppy tests at 7 weeks, getting the vet in to do microchipping and vet checking at 7 weeks, providing the puppy packs. It all takes time and money to put it all together. Nothing these days is cheap anymore. But a backstreet or backyard breeder wouldn't provide you with any of that. They would just give you, if you're lucky, a pedigree and a diet sheet. And even that could be wrong. And you wouldn't get the backup with a hobby breeder and somebody, you know, such as myself. You would get a lifetime support with that puppy for the duration, and you have to expect that that breeder would be on your case, or should be on your case, within the first few months, well, within the first days of having that puppy, to find out that that puppy is settling in, it's doing all right, and they would want to know the weight for the first year of the puppy's life. They'd want to know what the vet said about the puppy pack, about the puppy, how the vaccinations went. Is he eating all right when they come to tea then, how they're doing, everything. Because the hobby breeder will provide a contract, KC registration with breeding restrictions on and everything. A backyard breeder wouldn't provide a contract. They would probably, if you were lucky and had the parents registered at Kennel Club, then you might get KC registrations with the puppies, but they probably wouldn't have breeding restrictions on because that isn't down to, they wouldn't be caring enough to do that. Once their puppies have gone and they've got their money, that's all they care about. And probably won't be wormed properly, won't be checked properly by a vet or anything. And there are still today people docking their litters openly as well. So, and everybody must, you know, understand, the public has to understand that it is illegal and has been illegal since April last year. And, you know, the vets are duty bound to inform the local councils and the RSPCA if they get puppies come in. They're supposed to take records of everything, but as we all said at the time, there's not enough manpower and that to police it all. So things slip through, and lots of things have been slipping through. Yeah. But with the backyard breeder, majority of the time you'd probably go into their homes and might look tidy on the surface. And if they tell you, oh, you can't go and see parents out the back, that would be a big alarm bell, and you'd just walk around, and you would just turn around and go out the front door. You would not take a puppy from that.
Yeah.
Because if you went to a hobby breeder, you should be able to have hands on with everything.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, what sort of things, you know, even in initial contact, in a phone call conversation, and then when you get to where the puppies are, what things should be ringing alarm bells and making you think, nope, I'm not going to buy here?
When you first, anyone can sort of pull the wool over the phone, because it's not face to face and you're not in the person's home. But basically, you know, the member of the public, whoever's going for a puppy, should ask certain questions like, is the parent, for start, is the parent hip score, can they provide the papers, etc. You know, how old is mum, how many puppies, what's the breeding, and are they reared in the family home, etc. What diet are they on? You know, if they're saying, oh, we're not sure, or dad's just down the road or something, or you know, mum's not actually here, I've only got the puppies, just walk away, don't even go there.
Yeah. Now, I've heard of some schemes being offered where they will sort of deliver the puppy to you. Now, what do you think of that?
Wouldn't go there either.
Yeah.
You always have to see the mum with the puppies, because it's the mum that puts everything into those puppies. If the mum is stable and confident, the babies are going to be the same. You very rarely get a bad puppy. Yes, you do get one. You do get them sometimes. You do get an out-and-out bad puppy, and that should have been, you know, found out by the breeder. A good breeder would have sought that out, and a puppy test would sort, you know, found that puppy out, and it would have either been put to sleep or put into an experienced home, not into a novice home. But at the end of the day, these backstreet breeders, they are just out to make their money, and they will churn out the litters seasonally. You know, we're not allowed to do back-to-back matings, and many of us wouldn't even consider it because it takes so long for a bitch to recover from having a litter in the first place. But at the end of the day, you know, the backyard breeders will do that. They will breed on the next season when they shouldn't be, because it's not good for the bitch either.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time, if you can't see any paperwork, can't see, you know, when you've asked about it on the phone, they can't produce it, you just don't go there.
Yeah. Now, another term that is used is puppy farm.
Mm-hmm.
What would point you towards thinking, hang on, I think this may be a puppy farm?
That they'd have probably more than one breed.
Yeah.
Majority of the times they've got more than one breed. And it is, as it says, a puppy farm. You go there, it's a large premises. Sometimes it's in a big barn and the breeds are segregated up. And bitches have some terrible conditions usually. If they're in a shed, they're stuck on a little chair or a stool just to get away from the puppies, which is totally wrong. The puppies, 9 times out of 10, won't be clean. If you see any eye discharge from eyes or runny noses or skin complaints, you just walk away and you go and report it. Because they should have breeding license. I think it's after two breedable bitches just have breeding license. You know, puppy farms are just no-nos. They call them puppy mills in Europe and in America, and they're all the same all the world over. They have no interest in looking after and caring for the dogs at all. They will put a dog with a iffy temperament together with another one, or they will, you know, it's just horrible situation. And it's not fair on the puppies either, because they never asked to be born in the first place.
No.
And they're brought up in awful, crappy conditions, and it's horrible because it makes you choke, it makes you cry, and you get hardened over the years, but it still happens. Nothing shocks me anymore, because you've seen so much over the years that nothing ever, people can be so cruel and so unkind. And, you know, puppy farmers should be stamped out big time. But, you know, if they're giving the council their fees, the councils don't all go out and check them or anything. And, you know, people fall foul. And because they sell them cheaper, yes, you may get a KC registration with them, because they may have had the KC registrations with the parents. But with puppy farmers, a lot of the time the pedigrees could be fraudulent. They could, you know, could have got hold of the dogs, you know, badly, you know, from the wrong places or whatever, so they put a pedigree together and hope it's okay, and the unsuspecting public wouldn't know.
They wouldn't know
by looking at a pedigree, whereas those of us in the various breeds would know by looking at a pedigree whether those two dogs were put together in the first place, you know. And we've seen it and been there and done it and got the t-shirt over the years. So, you know, in Rotties there's been many fraudulent pedigrees and stuff, so, and we just highlight the kennel club, but, you know, they don't usually do too much about it anyway. So, you know, it's all left, and, you know, just basically you do not go to a puppy farm, no matter how cheap they are selling their puppies, because they're selling them cheap for a reason.
Absolutely.
And that should be your first alarm bell when they tell them that they're only 250 quid or 400 quid. You just walk away. You just don't even go there, because these days if you pay peanuts, you're going to get a monkey.
Yeah.
You've got to pay for... If you were buying something good for your home, you would expect to pay good money. So a dog, you expect to pay good money for to get what you want from that dog, i.e. that it's been reared and bred well, and that the parents have been, you know, temperament tested and house screened, so that you're buying to be part of your family for the next 10-plus years, you know, a lovely puppy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously there are... you know, pitfalls that you can fall into. And as you said, the worst thing is not to know what you're looking for or what the dangers are. Would you say that you can't get away from the fact that if you want a dog, you've got to do some research?
Yes, you have, yeah. You would contact the KC, you would look on the breed, you know, breed, Discover Dogs is a good thing to go to. And ever since they've been doing that, I think it has helped the public, because they've been able to go along, look at the breeds of dogs, decide for themselves, talk to the people that own them, that are there, stroke them, see them, everything, know whether they want to take on a big dog that slobbers or one that's really that molts a lot, or, you know, one that's going to be a big dog. So you've got to make sure that you do put the training in and everything. And even some of the little ones, they can be quite feisty and snappy. So, you know, you've got to research it all, get the books on the breed. If there's DVDs on the breed, buy them, because at least if you've only forked out £10 for a book or £10 for a DVD and it's opened your eyes a bit more and you've thought, well, I don't want that breed actually, then you've only spent £10, whereas if you just rush out and buy the next puppy, you forked out a lot of money, or a little money, but you've got a responsibility there then. And 9 times out of 10 puppy farmers and backstreet breeders won't take the puppies back, and if they do, you won't get your money back.
I mean, what another thing that I think people should be aware of, you know, is how not to buy a puppy. How should you never buy a puppy? I mean, what situation would you say, no, never do that?
Well, firstly, you would never buy one from a car park.
Mm.
Because you can't see parents, you can't see the environment that he lived in.
Mm.
And the next one would be, don't buy from a pet shop.
Yeah.
Because they still can be bought in, you know, from pet shops. Do not buy from pet shops. Mm. It's the best thing you have to do is go to the breeders, to contact the breeders. And these days, the internet is such a huge, you know, at all. And you can go on there, you can put in your breeder dog and look in your area for breeders in your area. You can contact them and talk to them. You can talk to the breed clubs. And, you know, nowadays there are lots of DVDs on various breeds. I mean, Hound Dog, they do, you know, a huge range now on the various breeds and most of the popular ones, you know. And, you know, they're informative. They open your eyes a little bit. And there are loads of books on various breeds that people can get out to read. You can, you know, ask the breeders questions and, you know, people don't mind. What they don't like is if you waste their time and, like, say you're going to ring or say you're going to come and then you don't and you ring like an hour later, sorry, you know, we didn't decide not to. If you'd have rung and let them know that, you know, they could have seen somebody else that, you know, definitely did want one or something.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you don't buy from a car park. You don't buy outside of the person's home.
Yeah.
You always have to see the puppies with their mother.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky that dad lives near and you can go visit dad, then all the better. But a lot of the time we have to travel for stud dogs and quality stud dogs. So they could be up in Scotland, they could be in Europe, could even be in America. So you can't always see dad, but a good, you know, breeder will be able to show you photos, maybe even the DVD of the dad, you know, with all his health screens and everything.
Mm.
And I always provide photos and that of mum and dad in my puppy packs anyway.
So. Yeah, yeah. Or otherwise it could be a good excuse for a holiday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. A lot of people do that as well. But, you know, when we went to get Luca, it was, you know, a nice week and a bit away. So, you know, but at the end of the day, do never buy from a car park. Never buy when somebody says they're going to meet you halfway up the road or something with a puppy.
No.
And never buy from a pet shop because you're just fueling them to take the next litter in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the things I was thinking of was I know Jane Hayes from Dog Lost UK says, you know, if your dog is stolen, go to the nearest pub straight away because the odds are he'll be being sold in that pub.
In that pub, yeah, probably. And of course, a lot of these days, that if they're tattooed, there's ways and means around a tattoo, whereas with a microchip, there isn't. If the dogs are microchipped, you know, the quick scan, any police station, any dog warden, you know, any vets will be able to scan and as soon as they see it up, you know. And usually if your dog's microchipped, if your dog goes missing, you phone the company immediately to alert them and put it on that it's been, you know, lost and everything. So that would usually flag up, I think, at the vets and stuff. So, and these days, but with tattooing, it's different because they do awful things to try and hide tattoos. So, you know, it's better, you know, as I say, if, you know, people can go and see it for them as well, especially when there's children involved.
Yes.
You know, when you're a family and you're going to look for a puppy, it's a joint family decision.
Mm-hmm.
The children are on board on this as well. You know, they need to be at ease around the mum because that's how big, you know, the puppy's going to get, or dad, that he's a bit bigger, and they need to, you know, be part of it. And it's all a family thing. So, you know, all the training, everything is all done together. So for me, I would never, ever consider going to buy a puppy in a car park or in a pub or anywhere because it's just dodgy end of the day.
Yeah.
I even when I didn't really know about dogs in my teenage years, I always knew that you had to go to the breeder's home to see the mum, to see the puppies.
Mm. Is there anything else you think that people need to know about getting a puppy?
Well, make sure that it is the right breed for you. And just do your homework. If you do your homework and you don't rush into things, what's meant to be will be.
Mm.
And if you research it, you ask the questions, if you don't like what the breeders are telling you, because not everybody is, you know, up there and 100% right, if they can't provide the paperwork, then go elsewhere. It's mandatory in Rottweilers to have IPS done, but that's it. It's not mandatory to do anything else, of which we've wanted for a long time to get it all mandatory. And in other breeds, they have to have eye tests and I think it's gun dogs have to have eye tests every year and they have to have HD, ipsplasia, x-ray, you know, for hips as well. And, you know, if they can't provide the paperwork to prove it, then you don't buy.
Yeah, yeah.
You go to someone. If a breeder spends time with you on the phone and invites you into their home and shows you everything, 9 times out of 10, you won't even have to ask.
Yes, yeah.
With me, I rattle it off just straight away. And it's baffling to the owner down the end of the phone, but it's there. They've been told everything before they even get a chance to ask. And at the end of it, I usually say to them, have I missed anything? And that's their opportunity to ask me if I've missed anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But a good breeder will do all that, and it will all be laid out and shown to you, shown to them when they come. They may not understand what's in front of them, a set of x-rays or the thing, but they're being shown. They can see it's an official thing. They can see the stat, they can see the BVA things on the hip and the elbows. They can see that this, for the Great Swiss, we have to do the shoulders, so they go to Switzerland. You can see it's come from Switzerland. You see the vet's signature and everything on it. The eye test, the heart test, it's all done on official forms.
Mm.
So they can see all that. And the bonus with us is because we keep the x-rays, we're allowed to keep the x-rays, so we show them the x-rays as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So the hips, elbows and the shoulders, and the character tests, we get nice certificates. We also get the sheets to show what the examiner thought about the dogs. So we show them all that as well. Yeah. So with a back the old breeder and all that, they won't have anything. No. They really won't. And buying cheap will cost in the long run.
You know they say there's no such thing as a free lunch? Well, there are no bargain puppies either. If you want a quality pup from a quality breeder, you have to pay a decent price. And I don't mean you have to get ripped off. But it's a false economy to buy a cheap puppy. And it lines the pockets of bad breeders. For more information, visit Kimberly's website at Samala Rottweilers. And if you're thinking of buying a puppy, start with your kennel club and breed clubs. Fishermen traditionally regard dogs as unlucky and will not take one out in a boat or mention the word dog whilst at sea.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. Dogs win titles in many ways, but a dog with an unfortunate appearance has gained the title of the ugliest dog in Britain. His name is Hubble, and currently he is living at the Leeds Dog Trust Centre, waiting for a new owner. He is 8 years old, a terrier cross, and has an excellent character. However, poor Hubble is missing part of his nose and mouth due to an accident when he was younger, and is also lacking several teeth. Hubble ended up in Dogs Trust after his owners left him tied to a tree.
His unenviable claim to fame as the ugliest dog in Britain has generated much interest in him, so let's hope he's soon happy in a new home. Another dog in the UK looking for love, but in a slightly different way, is a Jack Russell called Perkins. Apparently, 6-year-old Perkins shows great interest in every lady dog he meets, and sometimes takes to howling in the night to attract a mate. His owner has turned to both traditional and more modern means of finding a lady friend, with a Lonely Hearts ad in the local paper and a profile on the internet.
We have to say, though, that Perkins Vet may have a much quicker and easier solution to his frustrations. Meanwhile, in America, an Oklahoma dog had other problems on his paws recently. He was left in the car while his owner was using a do-it-yourself car wash. So far so good, but then poor Killis, a 70-pound pit bull, knocked the car into reverse gear. The car moved backwards and travelled in a large loop before coming to a stop again. Luckily, no one was hurt, and amazingly, the car didn't even hit anything while Killis was at the wheel. But very soon after, things went downhill for his owner. Police arrived to investigate the incident and found the driver had no insurance, and the car was duly towed away.
Happily, Killis and his owner were able to walk home together because at least the dog was properly licensed, even if the car wasn't. Now, it's not often that a single litter significantly increases the population of its breed, but a litter of just 9 Commodores, born in Cornwall in the UK, lifted the breed's numbers by 25%, taking the number up to 49. The breed is known as the world's hairiest dog, with very heavy fur which grows into floor-length dreadlocks, which must make grooming very difficult. They are also known as the ultimate sheepdog, as their origins are in Hungary, where they protected sheep and cattle. The pups, as well as being very rare, are also very expensive, costing about £1,000. That's around $1,500, but they do have a reputation for being very loyal.
Meanwhile, in Queensland, Australia, a cattle dog cross Dingo was honoured by the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals for his loyalty. Brave Diesel and his family were in the garden, with a 3-year-old family member on a swing. Without warning, a brown snake appeared and prepared to strike at the child. Diesel was quicker than the reptile, though, and quickly jumped between child and snake. The boy escaped without injury, while poor Diesel suffered 2 bites, but was not badly hurt.
What a brave dog! And now you'll have to be brave too, because that's it from the Dogcast Radio News for now, and indeed for this year. But we'll be back with a pick of the dog-related news in 2009, including that most pressing of doggy issues, just what breed or mix of dog will accompany the Obama family into the White House. Until 2009, goodbye.
Three white dogs seen together are considered lucky in some areas. Black dogs are generally considered unlucky. There's great news about Hubble, who Kate and Nick mentioned there, because the dog the media christened the ugliest dog in Britain has now been adopted and is living with his new family. There's also great news about the Dogcast Radio website, because we've added a video section. You'll find the video button next to the photo button at the top of each page, so do go and have a look at what we've got so far. And if you've got video of your dog you'd like to share, go ahead and upload it. As with the photos and comments, each one on the Dogcast site is checked for relevance and suitability, so you won't see your video added immediately, but we do approve items as soon as we can. To complete our superstitions quotes theme, according to The Simpsons creator Matt Groening, a dog with seven toes can see ghosts. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
How long should a dog's legs be? Just long enough to reach the ground.